And we're back. It's the Taylor Report. I told you we'd be back. And I bet I scared you how quickly we came. But you were getting ready to listen to some music. Well, you're out of luck. We're talking of music. We'll ask Phil Connie. Phil, what are you doing on your program tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
At what time?
At 12 noon tomorrow on Classical Underground. I'm having Wayne Gooding, who's the editor of Opera Canada magazine, present a two-hour program of the music of Giuseppe Verdi. We're celebrating the 200th anniversary year of Verdi's birth. And Verdi is a giant figure in the history of human liberation and just the most wonderful composer of dramas and operas that ever were.
You know the movie 1900?
Yeah, that
opens
with Rigoletto.
With a man walking along, waving a stick sadly, and he says, Verdi is dead.
That's right. And
wow.
It was the same year as Queen Victoria, and my theory, Verdi contributed an awful lot more to human history than Queen Victoria. So well, that's tomorrow at noon for
well,
2 hours.
Well, you could probably check that out. But what he did was positive. If you're going to weigh it in terms of bad and good, she probably did more bad. But we are now joined by Rick Rozoff, Stop NATO. It's rickrozoff.wordpress.com. Are you there, Rick?
I am, Phil, and very glad to be back on your show.
Well, we're glad to be talking to you, and boy, the timing is exquisite, because as I was preparing questions for you, the story had been that NATO was quiet and even on the sidelines, but today the man called Fogg came forward and spoke to us. So could you tell us, first of all, why were they so quiet for a while?
This is a typical maneuvering. A lot has to do, I'm sure, with the respective domestic political atmospheres in NATO countries. You know, for example, it would be bad form, let us say, mauvais temps, for the British ambassador to NATO, shortly after his parliament, apparently, has torpedoed plans for the British government to partially spearhead the attack against Syria, mm-hmm. to then talk about his commitment to NATO to do just that. So I think sometimes there are minor political considerations, not to be taken terribly seriously, let's be frank about it, including in the United States, mm-hmm. which I assume we're going to get to in a moment, Phil. Mm-hmm. But the fact that to have been thoroughly NATO-ized is to effectively have destroyed any capability for effective parliamentary opposition or anything that, could try to imitate democracy, so mm-hmm. that in the long run, these governments are going to come on board, and NATO is already actively involved in war plans for Syria, we have to recall, including, with the deployment of 6 Patriot interceptor missile batteries in Turkey and a number of other activities. So, mm-hmm. This is simply a sort of pseudo-diplomatic sleight of hand.
Yeah, I noticed his first way of putting the foot in the water was to say, we're concerned, and they, of course, had said this about 3-4 months ago, and I guess longer, that is that our fellow member, Turkey, might be threatened. What kind of threat does Syria
represent to Turkey? None whatsoever, but this is a common refrain from Rasmussen, Anders Fogh Rasmussen, the Secretary General of NATO, when he, accurately enough, but I think revealingly, for the past year and a quarter at least, has repeatedly referred to Turkey as our southeastern border, that is NATO's southeastern border.
They use the word border.
That's correct. Yeah, not the southeastern member, southeastern border of NATO. So, referring to NATO as it is rather than as they euphemistically usually refer to it as, mm-hmm. Alliance of Democratic States and so forth. What in essence this is saying is this is a military entity and our southeastern border is Turkey, which borders not only Syria but Iran and Iraq for that matter. And that, this is the equivalent of my sending an advance guard out to your territory and maybe even on the other side of the border and then claiming that I need to defend that advance guard because you may threaten it. Well, and Turkey occupies that role.
Actually, there's a bizarre echo there in my mind of Abraham Lincoln saying to President Polk, they're not on our territory, they're on their own territory.
Referring to the Mexican War?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where they, this Western drive of the old American impulse, it just that is the logic they use, isn't it? They move into other people's territory and then say, I have to defend myself, he's attacking me.
I mean, that's how Hawaii became a state ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah.
The terms of the original Asia-Pacific pivot of the United States in the 1800s. But, back to the question of Turkey, we talked about it in your show, I know, quite a while ago, that Turkey, in a provocative move to test the air defenses of Syria over a year ago.
That's right. They've already had a plane shot down.
Right. And, the deployment not only of at least 1,200 troops, American, Dutch, and German, along with the 6th Patriot Advanced Capability 3 longer-range interceptor missile batteries to Turkey, to southern Turkey, to the Syrian border, but the recent consolidation and transfer of NATO's Allied Land Command from the Netherlands and Germany, I believe, to Turkey, and several other moves by NATO suggest that Turkey is not only a southeastern border of NATO, but is the spearhead that's going to be used in the greater Middle East, the South Caucasus, the Indian Ocean, ultimately. Mm-hmm.
They are having some management issues, I noticed, that, I suppose one of the things that I certainly want to know your thoughts about, but there are signs of they're not able to keep the herd together. They seem to be, about 3 or 4 days ago, the Egyptian government said, we don't like jihadists, and we don't like the U.S. intervening here. And number three, we don't like Turkey commenting on our internal situation. Now, then on the weekend, they did go to the Arab League meeting and apparently sat sort of on the fence, but eventually voted along with the Saudis, who give them a lot of money. But it looks like they're having some problems keeping all these guys in the same room.
I mean, this is not dissimilar to the Axis powers in the end of the 1930s and the beginning of the 1940s were, technically it was not only Germany, Italy, and Japan, but also Romania, if you recollect.
And Spain was sometimes showed up for the meetings, right?
Right, but that, Hitler would have
and went to Stalingrad, some of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, troops from, probably a good dozen countries went as mercenaries, much as they do from NATO's Eastern European new members now to Afghanistan. But the fact is, that Hitler would make certain promises to his fascist allies in Romania and simultaneously to those in Hungary, to the Iron Guard or the Euro Cross parties, respectively, or who had territorial disputes over Transylvania in this instance. Mm-hmm. And, the U.S. is in a comparable situation. They dominate the world, but they frequently have allies who are, contesting waterway or a slice of land or something of the sort, and the U.S. is cultivating Armenia increasingly as a NATO member, along with its neighbors Georgia and Azerbaijan, and it's difficult to balance those out. But ultimately, the U.S.'s plan is to be the ultimate arbiter of all conflicts around the world, all territorial disputes, ethnic and border and boundary and so forth, and that they'll make some trade-off. Everyone may not be equally happy, but in the long run, so the sense that Egypt, which I would guess right now would probably be willing to more or less be compliant with Iranian demands to use the Suez Canal. Mm-hmm. Should something erupt in the eastern Mediterranean, as seems likely to happen in the upcoming days, because the current regime in Egypt, the military junta, really in effect, does feel directly threatened by Turkey and by Saudi Arabia. However, as you mentioned, they buckled, and they voted in what was apparently a unanimous vote in the Arab League to urge on war against Syria. Mm-hmm. And this is something I think we may have discussed in past shows, the fact that the Arab League has been totally usurped. It has, in fact, been bought off by the Persian Gulf sheikdoms and, to a lesser extent,
this guy, this man, Prince Bandar, who used to own part of the Dallas Cowboys, he seems to think money will solve every problem. Do you credit that episode where they said he visited the Russians and got Putin very unhappy by suggesting that he could call off I forget what the name of this group is, one of the groups in the Caucasus, an Islamic group?
The two of them met. I don't know that I'm prepared to believe the other reports. I mean, I don't necessarily disbelieve them. I just haven't seen them substantiated a lot. And I've gotten some pretty heated arguments with friends of mine on this. So I will abjure.
We'd love it if you would share those heated debates, because you write very, very clearly, and I find you very persuasive. So if as a group, if you decide to publish that, let us know.
Thank you. They haven't been that extensive. I mean, the most immediate and certainly the most pressing issue is that of the announced intention of the world's sole military superpower. That's Barack Obama's characterization of my nation. Mm-hmm. And his Nobel Peace Prize, acceptance speech, of course. And, you know, the open announcement, which I believe is really raised the degree of international arrogance and lawlessness to a hitherto, you know, unattained degree. And that, what I'm talking about, of course, is even though I think any astute observer realized at a given point that the United States was going to attack Iraq, as it ultimately did in March of 2003, or, you know, maybe even, perhaps not even more than a couple of weeks ahead of the event, that the U.S. and NATO were going to attack Libya in March of 2011. Yes. Nevertheless, this is the first time, this truly is the first time, that the commander-in-chief of the world's sole military superpower has announced definitively that he is going to take unilateral military action against a sovereign nation that has not and does not threaten any other nation.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to simply hinting at it or, you know, intimating to the world that he's going to do it. In this case, it, you know, it's been openly avowed. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think at some, you know, convening of a Nuremberg 2 trial.
Well, by the way, the Syrian government is trying to get that in front of the Security Council because they say you cannot threaten us. And as a matter of fact, you cannot act according to this body. And this body, the United Nations, should protect us from this indispensable country that's threatening us.
History is written by the victors, and evidently laws are too, or laws are, you know, meant to be adhered to or broken at whim, mm-hmm. at, you know, capriciously according to, you know, the dictates of the world's sole military superpower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that that line, and I'll repeat it as often to the point where people either get angry or nauseated from hearing it, but they respond to it, that that, you know, characterization or categorization of the United States that Obama, you know, made on the occasion of receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, has not sunk in.
Yes.
That no previous American president, no matter how bellicose, would have used language like that, I don't believe. At least I'm unacquainted with it.
Incidentally, I don't know, we should ask the Pope, but it sounds blasphemous, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, talking about the Pope, he could begin by excommunicating John Kerry and Joe Biden.
Indeed. Let me ask about that apropos, and I'll remind everybody, this is Rick Razov, rickrazov.wordpress.com. Go to that as quickly as you can. Stop NATO. This man Rasmussen and then Mr. Kerry and the French president today all talked about they have the evidence. I want to know something. What evidence? How do they gather evidence? And no one. Not only have we not seen it, but how they're not citizens of Syria. Where would they be getting evidence from the within the territory of Syria?
Well, I mean, sometimes they hint at what it is. Israel's Mossad, Saudi foreign services, you know, rebel contacts on the ground, which is, you know, again, an acknowledgement that the Free Syrian Army and adjuncts like the Al-Nusra Front or, you know, the terrorist Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist organizations, you know, are, you know, linked.
Solid credentials.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it has been since the late 1970s from Afghanistan onward through the Balkans, the Caucasus, North Africa, anywhere else they've chosen to use them. But this is an open acknowledgement that intelligence is being shared between, you know, so-called rebel groups in Syria and U.S. military.
Well, the Wall Street Journal last week was, in talking about how credible it was, said that the Saudis were one of the main conduits and sources. I mean, the Saudis. Now, the Saudis, of course, from day one called for the removal of President Assad of the sovereign government of Syria. They
right,
said,
so they're hardly a disinterested party. I mean, there are also stories circulating. You know, again, I can't substantiate them. It wouldn't surprise me if they turned out to be true. That Saudi Arabia may, in fact, have supplied chemical weapons to rebel groups. Mm-hmm. You know, sarin gas or whatever else. That's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Well, if people go back to what happened in Bahrain, there were reports of chemicals used on those populations, by the way, is my memory.
Yeah, and the Saudi government also roughly 2 years ago waged bombing runs, you know, in northern Yemen against a Shia minority in the north of that country. So that, you know, you have an increasingly aggressive Saudi Arabia appointed as a military policeman for the region, and we have to recollect it's none other than the Obama administration, the humanitarians, that have signed the largest bilateral military weapons deal in history with Saudi Arabia, to the tune of some $35 billion. Underline that for a moment. Mm-hmm. When the White House, the State Department, talk about human rights and respect for democracy and LGBT rights and God knows what else, and their closest military ally is Saudi Arabia. So
yes. Some of those weapons had to do with a particularly nasty form of it's either a bomb or landmine, which is a banned weapon. And I noticed the U.S. sold it to Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's a revelation to me. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I have to get that from the Wall Street Journal again.
sometimes we have to.
This is where we learn things. Yes.
I mean, if the devil quotes scripture to make his case, then sometimes we have to read the devil's scripture to find out what's actually occurring. But back to your question about the reliability of U.S. Gnostic knowledge of what occurred in the alleged chemical weapons attack of a week and a half ago. The U.S. once again is proving both to be, or attempting to be, both oracular and omniscient. Mm-hmm. They know even beforehand, what people are going to do. This, brings to mind, for example, Colin Powell's statement early in, when he was Secretary of State, early in 2003, before the event, that the latest Osama bin Laden tape was going to come out, and in it, he was going to defend Saddam Hussein. Now, that's truly remarkable, isn't it?
Yes.
That the Secretary of State of the United States not only knows when the enemy, who they cannot locate, is going to put out a tape, but even knows the content of it beforehand. It turns out, of course, the tape, whether authentic or not, we can, question, did nothing of the sort. Quite the opposite, called Hussein a godless atheist and urged his overthrowing, and that Al-Qaeda would collaborate with the United States to effect that, which, in effect, they have.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the question about the authenticity or the reliability of U.S. and French claims, and NATO now claims, mm-hmm. with Anders Fogh Rasmussen's statement of today at his press briefing. We do recall, Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday referring to those claims as unimaginable nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Stating if the U.S. had any such knowledge, they not only have the opportunity, they have the obligation to bring that evidence before the United Nations Security Council, which U.S. has no intention of doing, of course, because they have no such evidence.
Yeah, and by the way, and that, which leads to this other matter, since they say they have it and they don't tell us how, there seems to be maybe one of the most dangerous problems they are creating for themselves is they really act as though the American people will take their medicine and shut up. But there seems to be some sign that the American people, being who they are not inclined to shut up. I mean, there does seem to be more stirring around in the American political scene. What do you make of that? I mean, how strong is the opposition?
That's devoutly to be wished, but I'm not overly optimistic in that. We have to talk about decades now of intentional and all too effectual depoliticization, the body politic in the United States, the diversion, civic and political and other issues into mindless, self-indulgence and distraction. It's not for nothing that the U.S.'s ability to influence the world is largely determined by everything from, mass consumer culture to video games.
Mm-hmm.
And that, this ultimately depoliticizes and, a population to a horrible extent where people don't know and they don't care and they don't care that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We have to deal with that apathy and so forth. However, the fact that a sizable contingent of Congress people, Republicans, I think, more mm-hmm. than Democrats at the moment, for whatever reasons, including, partisan politic ones, partisan political ones, are willing to at least put a spoke in the wheel temporarily of the war machine. However, of course, today, the two warriors par excellence in the U.S. Senate, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, both came on board. And it's like two old poker hands, we'll see you, Obama, and raise you three.
Yeah, they want him to go ahead and finish the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, do the Libya thing, only this time say that you're going to do it, and that don't pretend you're not.
That's a good way of describing it. That really is. And what I've read, just terse summary of their meeting and the results, is they're urging, of course, what McCain has been beating the drums for a long time, for over a year, which is direct arming of the rebels, direct and acknowledged arming of the rebels with fairly sophisticated arms, which then, of course, are going to get into the arms market of the Middle East and the world and give the United thousands of countries for the next decades, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this is Rick Rozoff, rickrozoff.com. Pardon me, rickrozoff.wordpress.com. We just had a professor of international law talking to us, Michael Mandel. He wrote that great book, mm-hmm. How America Gets Away with Murder. And we asked, and I'm going to ask you the same question. Obama thinks he's going to kind of solve his headache of skepticism around him by taking this to Congress, but it's no less a war crime whether the U.S. Congress votes for it or they don't vote for it.
You know, if all 194 member states of the United Nations were to endorse this in the General Assembly, it would still be a war crime. Let's be frank about that. And if as with Libya and with Yugoslavia, Kosovo in 1999, U.S.-dominated military bloc like the North Atlantic Treaty Organization endorses it, it makes it no less a war crime.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the U.S. says, this is, I mean, worse than even George W. Bush ever hit, right? I mean, it's a new Nader. That without any mm-hmm. foreign support, it's sufficiently good if two of the three branches of the U.S. federal government endorse an illegal act of war.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what people are expected to swallow, both domestically and internationally, no? Oh, mm-hmm. it's okay, you know, if Hitler goes to his parliament and gets their approval first before he invades Poland.
Yes.
That legitimizes it.
He did it democratically.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
In fact, he probably did.
Yes. Well, certainly many, many of the crimes of the British were, their parliament was happy to do them. As a matter of fact, the American colonists lived through that. that vote shouldn't cut it. So the language is, I assume we'll be hearing is going to change, right? That strange thing he said on the both at his table with his friends and then out in the Rose Garden, it's going to be narrow, it's going to be precise, and it's going to be without boots, which I translate it's a bootless errand. Obviously that's a lie on a face fit, right?
Freebooting, I think, would be a little closer.
Yeah, freebooting would be better, yes.
Look, we've heard this exact lie in 1999. We heard it again 2.5 years ago. Supposedly a very limited surgical strikes against air defenses, enforcing a no-fly zone, and so forth. We have no intention of carving up countries. We have no intention of toppling governments. That's exactly what they ended up doing in Yugoslavia in 1999 and intended to do from the very beginning. And it's exactly what they accomplished in Libya and intended to do from the very beginning. And this is exactly what they're talking about again in the case of Syria. How often do people have to be lied to?
Yes. Well, it is. We seem to be in a moment here where they may be creating some little demons for themselves. The British might actually begin to take a little pride in having self-respect, which could cause a problem.
Well, that was another statement by Vladimir Putin the other day, where he said that he was shocked. He said he was accustomed to Britain being, the loyal lapdog of, the leading Western power of the United States. And he says, evidently, there's some people in Britain who still have some concern about their national sovereignty. And, I would hope Americans here in the U.S., mm-hmm. Had some concerns about their national sovereignty. And the fact that the people they elect, for better or worse, given the limited range of choices, to represent them, particularly in the House of Representatives, might actually respond to the concerns of the citizenry, as you were alluding to earlier,
mm-hmm.
Rather than to a bunch of empire builders, sitting in New York City or Brussels.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, and Rick, the last point here, you touched on, I think Mr. President Putin's comments, and as well as those of, I notice, and frankly, I wish people would look more closely at the comments of everyone. We all know what Obama says. We get to watch him do it. There should be more attention, actually, to the leaders of Russia and also the leader of Syria. I notice that, and I want to ask you a comment about this. President Assad said that, he said, when the colonial powers left Syria, it was not to liberate the country, but to reoccupy it through other means. And That struck me as rather smart, because that seems to be what is going on now. And then President Putin said that he thinks that this is happening because, frankly, this little gang of mercenaries is not doing so well against Assad.
You're right on both scores. I mean, the first is a classical definition of neocolonialism. I mean, this could be Kwame Nkrumah speaking when he defines how the colonial powers don't want to spend money for heavy and expensive infrastructure, so they leave their hook deep in the economic and security apparatus of former colonies and, you know, end up directing it on the cheap, if you will.
Empires have deep states. People like to use that on Turkey, Egypt, etc., but the U.S. is a deep state, isn't it?
Well, assuredly, the U.S. is a deep security state, certainly after World War II. To the present, and one that shows no signs of being diminished, even defunded for that matter. But on the second point you raised about Putin's comment, I mean that was one of his things. Why of all times would the Syrian government use chemical weapons when number one they were winning, the struggle on the ground, and number two, of course, there's the UN inspection team there at the very time. If somebody was to have staged a provocation, that was the time to have done it. And, from the point of view of cui bono, there's no way in which it can be the situation can be construed where the Syrian government would gain anything other than a war against it as a result of having done that. So the and the question of motivation, it's ludicrous.
Yeah. You stated very well. Great question, cui bono. RickRozoff.wordpress.com, Stop NATO. You're doing great work. We certainly appreciate the time you took.
Yeah, thanks for your kind words and for the opportunity.
Okay, talk to you soon, I hope.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Rick Rozoff. By the way, that is a great site, rickrozoff.wordpress.com. Go to that site, by the way, if you think to yourself, gee, I haven't read any nice plays or short stories or novels. They're all available there at the Rick site. He has taken out of world literature the great arguments against war by authors like Ambrose Bierce and Henri Barbusse, who lived through wars and can tell you what it's about, as opposed to George Bush and Obama, etc. Again, tonight at 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock at Betzatun, 612 Markham Street.
Betzatun.
The Communist Manifesto.
Who is the... I'm using the name Engler as a group, but which Engler is speaking? Do you know?
No, I don't, because
the mystery
they're
Engler.
Not telling.
We're going to have
Engler.
A talk
about
that.
I think it's Engler by committee.
Yeah. Engler, I hope they're all there. I admire every one of them. And Eve Engler has often been our guest. You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and you can write to us at taylor@ciut.fm. I'll just note that the last time the British Parliament told their Prime Minister they didn't agree with his war was when Lord North asked for more time and power to attack the American colonies in 1782, and they said, no, we've had enough. And the Americans are too barbaric to worry about anyway. They're mad. And so they lost. You would think that the British and Americans might take that moment to think about this. They had a very dim view of Washington and his crowd, but they thought, well, there's no point in going on with this. And they told him, stop. And that was the end of the... He had to resign as a result of that. The Americans, of course, thought they were fighting George III, and George III was around, but it was really Lord North was running the show. And it led to the Paris Peace Treaty, and just peace treaty is always nice. Now, I think we've done it, so I want to thank Phil, and he'll be on tomorrow Tuesday at 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock, Classical Underground.
12 o'clock. And so for the Taylor Report, I'm Phil Taylor at CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. We'll see you next week.